Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the Dale and Keith Show.
And all of a sudden he just screams on the phone, "Rob, I just want you to come back and play with me." And I was like, "Oh, all right, I'll come back then, Tom."
Dale Arnold.
Crazy thing about it was a preseason game. Me and LeBron going back and forth, the bench is yelling at something, and then I spit at him.
Rich Keith.
What Jordan said at the end of that documentary about players would have come back, that's just not true.
That was a complete and blatant lie by Michael.
Dale and Keith with Andy Hart.
Take my blood, but you're not jamming that thing 8 inches deep in me.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Our WEEI.com buddy Andy Hart is in the house with us. I would highly recommend, if you haven't done so yet, to take a listen to the off-day pod, courtesy of WEEI.com. It's Andy Hart, Ryan Hannibal. One of the things they discussed, and it has to do with the birthday boy. Julian Edelman turns 34 years young today. This comes on the heels of the fact that Pro Football Focus says the Patriots have possibly the worst wide receiving core in the entire National Football League. So how good a wide receiver is the birthday boy Julian Edelman if you agree with Pro Football Focus that the wide receiver group here is pretty bad?
See, this is where Ryan Hannibal caught me off guard, because we were talking about this, and he goes, "I mean, you're 30th, but could they be higher? They have a top 10 receiver." And I started laughing. No offense to Julian Edelman on his birthday, because...
How dare you?
We'll say his dad bod is a little better than mine, based on what I saw on Instagram in recent days.
He looks pretty good. Well, this is a...
Looks like Wolverine.
Impressed. This happened last year, and I remember talking about it after some of our interviews with Peter King, who, you know, every week we're talking about Tom Brady's performance, and he would say how, they have the worst skill position group in the league. He said in the league at one point, and we're like, I mean, maybe if you want to say, like, out of the contending teams or something like that, but in the league just feels really drastic. And then I always would go back to the same point. You can't have it both ways. Is Julian Edelman really good? Do you think Julian Edelman's really good? If so, they can't have the worst or, in this case, the 30th wide receiver position. But if you don't think he's as good, then now, okay, at least admit that, and then you can rank them as low as you want.
Right. Was he a Pro Bowl receiver a year ago? You know, everybody wanted to list him among the snubs, potentially, as he's been.
Well, he didn't make the Pro Bowl, but he had a Pro Bowl caliber season, I would say.
So, you know what he is? He's one of those NBA top 10 receivers where when you ask the person to make the list, there's 20 guys in the top 10. That's what Julian Edelman is, in my opinion.
All right, so, and just for the sake of argument.
Let's do this, Dale.
He was fifth in the NFL last year in catches. The only guys ahead of him were DeAndre Hopkins, Keenan Allen, Christian McCaffrey, and Michael Thomas.
So one's a running back. We kind of eliminate him from the discussion.
I'm just, that's where he ranked as far as catches are concerned. As far as receiving, whoops.
Uh-oh.
All of us, well, no.
I hit it
from worst to best, and I don't think he's going to show up on that list very quickly.
N'Keal Harry.
No, the worst was Andy Dalton.
Andy Dalton had a catch? If you're banking everything that N'Keal Healthy is Harry.
Oh, Jesus, we're still using that?
Yeah, that hasn't gone
all
anywhere.
The time.
Son of a...
So I'm looking at receiving yards for Julian Edelman. He had 1,117 receiving yards last year.
Career high.
Real good year. His catch.
And where'd that place him?
18th.
Yeah. Francesa, 1, 2, 3.
Count them all. No, but my point is, I mean, it's not. You can certainly use stats. I mean, because he also had, I think he led the league in drops, right? Like, so there's a lot of different.
Had a lot of injuries though that helped with that.
He did, and he had that too. He also had Tom Brady, but then like, how good is Tom Brady now? Like, there's so many
layers.
Things. There's so many layers.
He
to,
did
to,
play.
To,
he did
to
play
back.
In 16 games last year.
He did. It took
I don't
everything.
Know how.
It took
I don't know how.
Jim Whalen and the training staff used a lot of duct tape, a lot of who knows what to get him out there.
But
WD-40.
If you're kind of projecting for the upcoming season, like who are the best receivers in the league, I think he's probably not a top 10 receiver, but I think he's firmly in the top 20.
Firmly? Is firmly in the top firmly. Half of the top 20? Like the, I mean, the
yeah, I think
above 15?
Well, I think it sort of turns into the quarterback rankings debate where you get to like 8, and the guy that you argue for 8, I could argue for like 14, and like, you know, neither one of us are wrong, and there's a lot of guys kind of lumped together. Like, I don't really know, you know, like Stephon Diggs and Kenny Golladay and Allen Robinson and T.Y. Hilton and Tyler Lockett. And like, I don't know. Edelman's, he could be above all those guys. He could be in the middle of all those guys. Wow. He could be below, you know, like Jarvis Landry, who I love, but I mean, you could make a case like how much better is he really? So,
Rich, you and I share a brain because I'm looking at my notes.
Okay.
I prepped for this.
Me too.
It was my idea, so I prepped for it.
Yeah.
It was
a good call.
So I had 7 guys that I immediately, in my opinion, I just think are better than Julian Edelman. However, whatever your parameters are, however your criteria, because I do think anytime we do these lists, are you ranking him based on what he's done, what he could do in the future, or what he definitively will do this season, situationally, age? There's a ton of factors.
Yeah, how about this? How about we do who, like, for the 2020 season?
Right. So I have 7 guys that I immediately said, he's behind those
like
guys.
Can I
give you one number as you do this?
Yes.
Which means he can't even be a top 20 wide receiver for me.
Oh. Wow. Whoa.
His catch percentage last year was just a tick below Cameron Bratt and was 109th in the NFL.
Well, Dale, but again, he had that shoulder injury where he couldn't get his hands
above
his
shoulder.
Head.
And you've said you've made the point, Dale, that Brady missed a lot of throws last
year. He did.
Yeah. He was working with a quarterback that the team couldn't wait to get rid of in the offseason.
Catch percentage to me, and I go back to the old Troy Brown line to me. If I touch it, I got to catch it.
Yes.
I mean, those aren't all drops, though, right?
No,
just because a ball is intended for you doesn't mean you dropped it. I mean, I know he had a lot of drops, don't get me wrong. But
he did.
There were definitely times where Brady hit him in the shoes or threw over his head. So, I mean, again, I still think he's in the I have a hard time naming 20 guys better than him.
Well, I have, after my 7 obviously betters,
so who,
I have
Michael
17
Thomas?
Guys that I think are in sort of a range where you have to talk about Julian Edelman and what your criteria is. Yeah, my 7 guys, I had Hopkins, Michael Thomas, Mike Thomas, Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, OBJ, Mike Evans, and Tyreek Hill. I don't. Like,
not
to me,
Keenan Allen,
I would probably put there, but I put him in the next group.
Okay.
To be fair.
Yep.
He was 2nd in the league in receptions last year. Keenan Allen was.
Yeah, Dale, I'm not as
third. I'm
over
sorry.
The top
third.
On pure receptions.
Yeah,
I think
some of the, like,
it's a product of the offense and sort of, you know, volume. Like, you have to factor in playmaking and, you know, as you said,
no, but
catch
I think that's fair. I think those 7, and again, Beckham was also dealing with a ton of injuries last year.
Right, and like you would take group, him, right? I mean, just
Beckham?
Forget the, yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
thank you.
Course.
Like, that's
sort of
my criteria. It's like my Hall of Fame criteria when you say, is this guy a Hall of Famer? I need you to answer right now.
Yeah,
don't go research.
I would definitely take Beckham. I would even think about, like, Davante Adams.
Yep.
Missed a lot of games, too. But I like Adams, Keenan Allen, Jarvis Landry. I could be talked either way into Devontae Parker because he was really good last year, but he hadn't been for a while.
Right, and he was good against the defensive player of the year and the season on the line.
He smoked Gilmore, that's true.
So if you weight that performance. And then the other, like, layer or whatever you want to call it is it was a really good wide receiver draft class that came in and had an impact. Are you drafting some of those guys on potential? Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, you know, some of these young Cortland Sutton.
Yeah,
who
AJ
is
Brown.
Looking there? Yeah, Brown. Like, they're looking like really good young receivers.
I like Sutton. Yeah, true.
Would you take those guys? And I just, or how about guys coming back from injury? What if AJ Green comes back and suddenly he and Joe Burrow have this relationship? Because over the course of his career, AJ Green has been a all pro receiver and
he's been
truly
very good.
Elite receiver.
I'd have to wait on that one. I mean,
right.
Miss
so
the whole season.
I think it's easy to get Edelman in the bottom half of the league's number one receivers, in my opinion, to get him below 16. I think you don't have to work overly hard to find teams that have, and some have multiple. Like,
he played with Tom Brady on a team that was not hip deep in wide receiving talent. And there were 23 guys in the NFL who had wide receivers who had more receiving touchdowns than he did.
Right. But yeah, again, you can make the argument that's not his game. It's a different role, the slot receiver. He's a volume guy. That gets you that catch number, the 100 plus catches.
Did you say 23 receivers or just 23
guys?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of tight ends. You know, that's a lot of tight ends probably on that list. Maybe a couple, maybe a back or two. I just think it's kind of overstated to say that the Patriots, like, they let you down. They weren't very good. Tom Brady's going to one of the best receiver groups. But I still think Edelman is more than serviceable. Again, there's 32 teams in the league, and I think at worst, maybe you have him at 20. I think you could talk him up to 15, 14, somewhere in there.
You'd probably talk him down to 25.
You think that low?
I think if you really wanted to, you could. I could.
I guess if you wanted to. But, like, again, you have one game, or you have one season. Like, you really want Amari Cooper? Like, I think Amari Cooper's going to let you down.
Yeah, I don't like Cooper. Cooper Kupp.
Like, Robert Woods. Good player. Yeah, good. They're good.
What's Diggs going to be in a different offense now?
I would take Phelan Edelman over all those guys.
Yeah, so that's sort of preference. That gets into the layering. But also, he's 34. And as good as he looks as an Instagram model, you know, these slot receivers, we saw him battle injuries last year. Wes Welker fell off the map at 33, I think, a year before where Edelman is right now. He has a new quarterback. He loses that rapport with Brady. Would it stun you if Edelman, I don't know, missed five games this year and ended up with like 55 catches or something?
No.
It wouldn't stun me either.
No, it wouldn't. But so again, you have Beckham and Adams and A.J. Green and all these guys are hurt and coming off injuries too.
Young guys. Like, there's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie, right? Whether it's Judy or Lamb or
definitely.
There's going to be a receiver who comes in and is great. There could be, you know, these second and third year receivers I'm talking about, like Calvin Ridley. Maybe Calvin Ridley has his massive breakout year and like passes up Julio Jones, becomes the go-to guy, 1,500 yards or something.
He could.
I mean, there's a million, or Cam Newton and DJ Moore breaks out because
Moore
he and Bridgewater like sync up immediately or whatever.
You know who nobody's mentioned is Brandon Cooks, and nobody will mention.
No, because he's just kind of that run-of-the-mill.
He's just like, he goes out, puts up, you know, decent numbers. And he's like, no thanks.
Yep.
And I don't want to overstate this because it's unfair to do that, and I know we've got to get to a break here, but we talked about this last year. The position that he plays, the shots that he takes, he doesn't even sound the same as he did a few years ago.
No.
When
you talk to him post-game and you get later in the year and he's got that damn beard at full growth and he keeps one eye closed for some reason. I don't know if he thinks he's a pirate or what it is, Dale.
I don't think he can control that.
That's scary. I mean,
I'm not
scary.
Even making a joke.
And sometimes he doesn't finish sentences, and you're like, is this an act? Is this your shtick? Or is this repetitive, you know, blows to the head, CTE, that we've seen in other players?
It's like, could it be like the year like when all of a sudden Welker was just, that was it?
Yes.
Like, there was like a time where you're like, he was having a really good year, too. That happened during the year. He was having a really good year with Denver, and then that was
then he
it.
Wore that, Magoo helmet thing or whatever. Yep. And, you know, some of it could be painted as, oh, well, you know, Brady left and he just never really clicked properly with Stidham. Stidham went with the younger guys. There was a youth movement. Or it could be he's 34 years old as a slot receiver.
And you know who's better than all those guys we named?
Hellacious shots.
Antonio Brown is on the list if he's ever in the league. Now, Rich, you would have Josh Gordon on the list because you thought about a year ago or so he was a top 10, 20 receiver.
Yeah, no, it's a good point because the rankings a year ago would definitely still apply now.
I like when you get defensive.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We've got a High Noon hot take coming up just after 12 o'clock from our buddy Andy Hart. Kiefer Madness at 12:30 in our Week in Review, which will also include wise words from Wiggy.
Yes.
Shime's giving away free money. And we've got our winner of this week's Dale and Keefe Movie Club still to come. Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart, Sports Radio, WEEI.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Andy Hart is in with Dale and Keefe every Friday on WEEI.
If you ask all the guys who won in 98, Steve Kerr, Jeff Busler, blah, 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 we give you 1 year contract to try for seven. You think they would have signed? Yes, they would have signed. Would I sign for 1 year? Yes, I would have signed for 1 year. I've been signing 1 year contracts up to that. Would Phil done it? Yes. Now, Pip, you would have to do some convincing, but if Phil was going to be there, if Dennis was going to be there, if MJ was going to be there to win our seventh, Pip is not going to miss out on that.
So that was The Last Dance, the end of episode 10, in which Michael Jordan suggested that they could have got the band back together again to try to win a seventh NBA title. Now, there have been other people out there, Horace Grant and others, who have said there is absolutely no way that was ever going to happen. I am of the mind that there was no way Scottie Pippen was coming back.
Yeah, there's no way unless they pay him. And that's, I guess, all part of the deal. And you would say, all right, Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf had it in their minds that 98 was it. They even made that ridiculous quote that everybody keeps saying, even if Phil goes 82-0, he's not coming back. So they were ready to move on. So it doesn't feel like they were going to do it anyway. But let's say they did. That means they'd have to change a lot of things, going back on their word about Phil, going back on their word about their other guys. If they gave Scottie Pippen a ton of money, then sure, I think he would stay for a ton of money. But unless they did that, he's definitely gone.
Right. It's easy for Michael Jordan to say, yeah, I've been playing on one-year deals. Yeah, 1 year for $30 million. One year for $33 million. You're by right. far, like, doubling up for years, the highest paid player in the NBA.
And, 96, and by the way, 97. Worth it. And worth it.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not arguing it, but
for sure,
it's easy to make that argument if you're him. But Scottie Pippen, I don't have the full list. We know Scottie Pippen was grossly underpaid, and then he pops up on the top 10 highest paid, 98, 99, $11 million. He's 10th Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. He gets paid. He gets into that hierarchy. I think it's more than a little convincing he would have had to have taken, right? Talking from $33 million. He's talking from nothing.
All right, so Sam Smith, the guy who wrote the Jordan rules, whether you think Horace Grant was one of the leaks or not is beside the point. Sam Smith wrote the Jordan rules. He was on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco, and he wanted to set the record straight on why the 99 Bulls did not happen.
I'll tell you the reality of it. You know, it's a lot of nostalgia 20 years after, or whatever the case might be. And that was a complete and blatant lie by Michael. That couldn't have been more than, you know, there were several things in the documentary I saw, I would know, that he made up or he lied about. There weren't major things, but it was like, you know, it's like when a TV movie comes on and they say, this is based on a true story. That's what that was. It was based on a true story. They had all the outlines of what happened, but a lot of the detail, like the, you know, like the pizza thing, the poison, that was complete nonsense. Yeah, and there were a couple other things like that, you know, I won't go into, but it weren't major.
So I have an issue with that, because when you say that, like, a movie is, quote, based on a true story, we know that they change major things. That's like the whole idea. Like when the Texas Chainsaw Massacre based on a true story, and you're like, well, actually, it's like a serial killer who didn't live in Texas, and it's like all they change so many things. So for Sam Smith to be like, yeah, it's watching one of these shows that claims to be real, but it's not major things. Like, they weren't major things. So, like, what, I don't really understand his big complaint. Like, Jordan said he got food poisoned by these pizza guys, and he's saying it wasn't the pizza guys. Okay, then, like, what's your theory on it then, Sam? Like, why don't you tell us what the truth is?
Yeah,
I just feel like a lot of guys, I think Sam Smith and Horace Grant obviously either have issues with Jordan, or they didn't like how everything was portrayed, and now they're like, the whole thing's a sham. Jordan's production company was in charge of it, and they made him look good. It's like, I feel like he looked good to some people. Some people are calling him a bully, and some people are like, the guy's crazy. And, like, I don't know. I think everybody has their own different opinion about how the thing played out.
Jason Hare admitted that 23 Jumpman, or whatever it is Michael Jordan's production company is called, did have say in the editorial content. Did
But he said they didn't ask him to take anything out.
Did they ask him nothing, to put anything? Did they ask? Did he ask him to put anything in?
And did
well,
they,
he said they didn't really do anything. Like they gave him notes, but they worked with ESPN, they worked with Netflix, they worked with whatever Jump 23, and they worked with some other place. He said, and he was like, there was nothing like editorial that like changed because of them.
But according I would also him, question, you know, having worked for the Patriots for 20 years and knowing the parameters under which I worked, sometimes you just do it. Right. Like you don't have to specifically be told what not to put in a story or on the website. You just know the framework with which you work with. That's a terrible sentence. You would be proud. But like there's also that pressure. Like, you know, if you screw Michael Jordan, you're done. Your career ends. Correct. We've seen that.
Well, this the way he this treats entire 10 part docuseries might go up in flames if you
right,
screw Michael
Jordan.
But I'm
saying even if it gets to air and you're like, now you have this, you did this 10-part series, everybody loved it in the midst of a pandemic, it gave the world something to talk about, but Jordan's mad, he will squash you like Lance Armstrong or one of these other guys, right? He will make it his life's work.
Yeah,
his best buddy was Charles Barkley, right? And then Barkley said he couldn't run the Bobcats and he hasn't spoken to Barkley since.
Pretty
so
crazy.
We know he's vindictive. We know you
oh,
work
yeah,
within
but they
a pressure.
Make that clear. They make that very clear in the documentary, too.
No, I know. Oh, I'm of the belief that, is this from Jordan's perspective? Is it fluffed up for Jordan? Is it pro-Jordan? Yes, I believe it is. But I don't know that that necessarily means it portrays Jordan as like a saint. I actually
think
takeaway, I told Mutt the other night, I don't think Michael Jordan likes himself. I think he came to that realization. He does not like the human being that is Michael Jordan. He liked the basketball player. He liked the winner. But he tearfully realized he didn't like himself.
Oh, wow. That is deep. I don't know if that's true.
Well, let's give you one more from Sam Smith.
Let's get Jordan on the horn.
Sam Smith on 95.7 The Game. This was in San Francisco. And he explained that it was actually Michael Jordan who ended the Bulls.
But the thing at the end was a complete blatant lie. But I know what happened was, it was a lockout that year, 98-99. You know, Michael being smarter than, and Phil too, they recognized, they saw this, and what they used, you know, they took advantage of Krause a lot. They both knew, and they both understood at the beginning of the 97 season, this thing couldn't sustain. Pippen, obviously, you know, and Michael commented in this, which Scotty obviously didn't like, I guess, postponed the surgery, so he purposely missed the first half of the season. Rodman, as you can saw, you know, was losing it during the season. I got to go to Vegas. I got to have a vacation. You know, whatever is going on. You know, I have to have relations with my girlfriend on the floor of the arena. Michael's aware of, you know, he sees all this, but, you know, what a great opportunity, you know, to put Krause on the spot again, you know, blathering this thing about Phil in 82-0, which was, you know, Phil had made clear to the ownership, like, the year before even, that he was done, he needed a sabbatical. And if you look also, Phil, you could see was eyeing what was going on with the Lakers. So this notion of I can't play without Phil, well, he went and played with Doug Collins 2 years later. So it's just Michael now in an older thinking back, oh, it would have been nice being with the guys again. But back then, he cut it off.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where unless you win, unless whatever the transit, we're living it right now, right, in Boston? Bill Belichick decided to walk away from Tom Brady. Tom Brady decided to walk away. If they both crash and burn in flames, it will be criticized, right?
Of course.
If Jarrett Stidham's a Pro Bowl quarterback this year and the Patriots are in the Super Bowl in 2 or 3 years, it'll be praised. And, you know, you go back to those stories about Red Auerbach, you know, not keeping the keeping the Celtics together too long, the original Big Three, right?
Right.
Should have moved on. Well, that's easy to say. Now, I would have preferred Jerry Krause to be alive and to be able to have a verbal presence looking back retrospectively on this documentary, right?
I do feel like Reinsdorf kind of confirmed that. Like, unless the 82-0 line is a lie, it feels to me like Krause was going to break it up. Now, maybe
right.
Krause was in the... Maybe his intentions were good for the franchise, right? Maybe he saw it and said, listen, we can't keep Rodman on the rails for another year. We can't pay Pippen. Phil's exhausted or whatever. Maybe he had his reasons for it. But to have a line like that and for a team to win three in a row, like that's the difference. The big three Celtics had a few years there after they had won where they were going through and they were losing to the Pistons or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, the Patriots, just this last year, we saw them kind of crumble at the end and lose in the wild card round. The Bulls won three straight, and Jordan was the MVP in 98. So I could see why Jordan was saying, you know, he would have come back for one more and blah, blah, blah. Again, maybe some of it's revisionist history. But
yeah, I don't think he felt that way then.
Right.
You know, it's easy to say now, 20-some-odd years later. I don't think that if they had come up to him at the end of that season and said, how about it, one more? I think he would have said no.
But don't you think starting the year knowing that Phil is out and the way that Phil kind of goes about things to all of a sudden at the end change it and be like, hey, you want to come back for one more year? Like, Phil wasn't going to do that.
See, I think if Phil had come back, maybe Jordan comes back.
I think they're back together. I think it's sort of similar to Brady and Belichick. Like, the decision happens one year, but really the mind was made up the year before.
The foundation had been laid a year or two before. And
that's
I think it's fair to question, separate Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan could have been back. I think it's much harder to argue that the rest of the team could have been brought
Pippen,
back.
There's no way Pippen's back unless they pay him a ton of money. And Jordan even kind of says that. I know he ultimately says, well, you know, if we're all back, I think we could get Pip. But he was like, even he pauses and is like, yeah, that would take some convincing.
And so, what would the financial ramifications of the time have been for that? I'm not going to pretend I know. Like, you're paying Jordan. So he made 30, then 33. Let's say you're paying Jordan $36 million a year on his bird rights or whatever, because the cap was like $20 million. It's one of those ridiculous numbers. What can you pay Pippen? Are you allowed to give Pippen bird rights and pay him $11 million that he got from Houston? Can these numbers just keep escalating?
I have no idea what it was like in the late 90s. I don't know.
So,
like, they traded away Dennis Rodman, and part of that was, you know, they'd blown the whole thing up, but part of it was what a pain in the rear end it had to be to deal with him on a day-to-day basis.
Well, you would only keep Rodman, I think, if you had Phil, Michael, and Scotty.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, you're going for another title. If not, like, you're not – you're certainly not rebuilding with him, but even if you like lose Pippen, you're like, oh, like, we got to find a way to replace Pippen, and that was not going to really happen.
Was the part about him having relations with his girlfriend on the court part of the documentary? I missed that.
I didn't see that.
Okay, I missed that.
No,
if it was.
Doubt
I remember Carmen Electra in the hotel room, and Jordan
part,
came in, and that whole
mean,
thing.
Frankly,
that part cut out.
I believe anything.
Oh, death with him? 100%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No question. I remember in 2001 on Bourbon Street, first Patriots Super Bowl, I was in this weird bar outside venue. And Dennis Rodman strutted in like, it was like, I don't even know, Jesus came in. And then he was up on stage and he was hammering shots. He was a absolute, I don't know, fiasco. It was weird. Wasn't my element, by the way. I get out of there quickly.
Yeah, you're like, I got to go.
Yeah, this doesn't seem like
good
a place
things aren't going
to
happen next.
No.
Look, I think it's fair to say that anybody who's looking back on even, you know, consequential events from 20 years ago, their memory's going to get a little hazy on stuff.
Al Bundy?
Yeah, some of the details.
Polk High, four touchdowns.
No question.
Some of the, you know.
Steve Kerr's like, I had 57 in that game. Yeah. I think I hit 23s. Yeah. It was, I had a pretty good game. No, that's the reality. And that's, I think that's, you know, ties into, you know, all these Brady documentaries and moving forward. This seems like it's the trend we're going in where athletes have quite a voice in these supposed documentaries about them. And to some degree, Bill Belichick and NFL Films and his relationship with that Ken Rogers guy that produces all those things. You have to take it for what it is. Is it great to see the footage? Is it great to get behind the scenes some? Do you have to realize that there's still a certain lens on the camera that you're not getting the full clear picture? I think you do.
I see, and I actually think that the 9-part Tom Brady 30 for 30 series that ESPN began touting yesterday, I think it's going to be awful compared to this.
It's going to be a snore. It really is. And I know that sounds like, oh, Brady's gone and now you're bad-mouthing him. No, based on what we've read, it sounds like it's going to be him going through like these Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And again, okay, great. And I think that's aimed very much toward the Patriot fan who right now has kind of mixed feelings on the guy anyway.
Right.
Whereas, you know, like when like those Do Your Job specials or like America's Game specials, if I'm a fan of another team, I'm not watching that. I don't care. I don't want to watch, you know, how the Eagles, their run to the Super Bowl. Like, I don't care. And it just seems like it's going to be without any kind of pushback or criticism or anything, just going to be like, yeah, then, you know, we were underdogs against the Rams. Then we went in there and we beat the Rams. And trust me, I'll watch that Ty Law pick six all day long. But to just go through all the highlights. I said the same thing. I go, with Jordan, if all it was just Michael Jordan sitting down and being like, and this is when I went up with my right hand and flipped it to the left hand and we beat Magic Johnson.
For
like,
no reason.
I like here, snore. So like that reason, wouldn't interest me.
Here's the reason why we wanted it and we liked it and watched it so much. I don't know why these cameras were allowed the kind of unfettered access they had. I mean, they're in the training rooms. They're in Michael Jordan's hotel room.
Right.
I don't know what they had planned to do with it. I don't know where it's been sitting all these years. But that was the thing that Tom Brady's not going to have.
That's a great freaking question, Dale. Why? Like, when Jordan, because Jordan obviously okayed it. The team okayed it. Because you see when they actually at times let him into doors and like say, come on in, let's go. What was the long con? What was the plan? Did Jordan have some grand scheme with Nike that this was going to be, you know, some business opportunity? That's a
great
question.
Did they say at the beginning of the year, they just said that they'd like, they gave him all this access.
Right.
So I don't know what the long-term plan was, but obviously it was no secret that this could be their last year and this is one of the great
dynasties.
And I don't think it was a Jordan thing. I think it was a Bulls thing. You've got the footage where the PR guy is calling the camera. Here, come in, come in. Come
right.
In. Look, Dennis isn't going to talk to anybody. We got to sneak him out.
Gate
three and a half.
Right.
Yeah. And you follow him. Now, that's the Bulls who are doing that.
Well, but Jordan has to sign off on it. He clearly signed off on it. I read something about how he did sign off on it. And there's been other proposals along the way over the last couple decades to people knew about it, to put it to use. And for whatever reason, he gave the green light. I even heard a story that he gave the green light when LeBron won in Cleveland. Like that there was some, LeBron thinks he owns the basketball world. I'm going to take
Brian
it over
Windhorst
again.
Said that.
Yeah.
He's full of crap.
Whoa, excuse
full
me.
Full of crap.
We don't believe anybody on this show. Sims, Windhorst. No.
Well, Windhorst.
Next, you're going to tell me Ahmad Rashad was not unbiased.
I like Ahmad Rashad. He's the greatest. He's the greatest TV analyst of all time. I love Ahmad
Rashad.
How about
the story that has come out since, where Jim Gray, he's in the training room and Rashad's there. Which, by the way, you can't even get near a training room now, but a different day. And Jackson comes in and throws Jim Gray out, and Ahmad's sitting there, and Jim Gray says, "What are you doing? He's sitting here. What are you throwing?" And he says, "Ahmad's family, you're out."
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Ahmad,
oh, a whole
like
different
the
world.
Team.
Did you? There was one part of it where Craig Sager asked the question of,
that's so good.
Like backstabbing or whatever to Krause.
He's like worried about like the backstabbing, like backstabbing Phil. He's like, "There's no backstabbing going on."
Think of what Craig Sager went on to be, this beloved. You know, even Popovich loved Craig Sager, and then obviously he got cancer and he died tragically.
To be fair, Sager was very friendly with a lot of the players, and he would wear the crazy suits. But he would ask hard questions.
Right.
He always would. I remember him, like, everybody was afraid to ask Ron Artest these questions after, like, all these playoff games. And Sager's right in his face asking him the tough questions. So he was doing that in the 90s. He did that up until the day he died.
Are you surprised that the team has stayed together and the chemistry has been that good with all the backstabbing between you and coach and everything?
Well, there's no backstabbing going on.
Why can't we have that? Because I don't have the testicles to. Bill, are you surprised the success you guys have gotten off to 8-0 with all the backstabbing between you and Tom this year? I'll see myself out. Thank you.
Not gonna happen. Yeah, not happening.
But all of those that behind the scenes footage, that unfettered access, none of that exists with the Patriots. Now there's there's Brady stuff like Tom versus Time,
right?
Where we can see the aggressive Alex Guerrero rubdowns and stuff.
But there's going to be outtakes of that, right? Like some of that.
But they're not in locker rooms. They're not in training rooms.
Well, Dale, there's more than you think. Dale, there's more than you think.
All right, let's. Well,
what is the
aggressive rubdown? All right, let's play the game. So, do you think that Bill Belichick allowed Brady access to footage of him in a meeting room talking to the team and, "Oh, for God's sakes, what are you doing here, McGinnis?" Do you think that exists? And if it does, you think Brady has it?
I don't think Brady has it.
Right.
I think NFL Films and the New England Patriots have a lot more footage than you would think.
Oh, I agree with that. But Brady doesn't have access to
that. That's why
the
question is, down the road, forget this first one with Brady, whatever. Down the road, do you get something that is more like The Last Dance when Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, the New England Patriots, and NFL Films all come together for a grand production?
I want them all together.
There is enough footage that you could have a real, whether it's mic'd up stuff you haven't heard on the field, Belichick, meeting rooms, Patriots.com, Kraft Sports Production footage, NFL Films footage.
I know they got that Bengals sideline.
Easy.
They got it.
They get punished.
You put
yet?
That in there. That'd be a good episode.
When are we
No, they're busy. They've got other
doing
things
what?
They're worrying about.
I don't see the advance scout in this footage.
Hardo Central. I just want to punch that guy in the face.
The damage is done, my friend.
Oh, you tool. You straight to DVD movie actor.
But I also think one of the great things to me about the Bulls documentary was just the number of people that they spoke with. So they had all these guys that were on Jordan's team. A couple of them ended up being opponents, like Horace Grant and B.J. Armstrong. So you got that perspective. The episode where Isaiah Thomas was in it might have been as interesting as anything, talking about the dynamic of the Pistons-Bulls, but also the Dream Team.
Right.
So there was, like, real conflict in the
documentary. Characters, conflict, right.
Yes.
That's what you need.
You had two presidents for crying out loud in the thing.
Right. So that's a fair point. Who's going to be on Brady's? Like, who... Is there somebody?
I think Tom, the
conflict Julian Edelman.
G.
Yeah, a lot of conflict with Edelman. Then he threw another great pass, and then he threw another great pass.
No, you remember Tom versus Time. He got on Julian for, like, benching or something. Remember?
For
lifting? You use more than bands. Get out of here. You're not cool.
How many times in the 9 episodes is he going to be just eating those Protect vitamins?
Hawking TB12 vitamins?
What are we doing, Jules?
Under Armour logo will be shown, and then TB12 logo, then whatever car he's in right now. Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I like watching highlights as much as the next person, but there's a difference between sitting there and watching, like, the greatest plays of Tom Brady's Super Bowls, which is nice, and then, like, a really good sports documentary. There's a big difference.
I'll tell you how he could salvage it in that regard.
Put us in charge.
If they do a sit-down interview where Tom Brady is saying, I got to tell you, I don't know what the hell Bill was thinking with Malcolm Butler, because we win that Super Bowl if he plays Butler. And what I heard happened was this and that. And, you know, you got to let him play. Now, then you've got something.
And the chances we get that are...
Oh, no.
You scrimp Ian McNally on there, too.
I don't think they'll be in it.
No?
Nope.
You don't think those, like, episode 4, maybe.
Nope.
You put those guys in there.
No, I don't think any of that will be in there. Yep. Zip, zilch, zero.
Well, you've got the perfect opportunity. One of the big moments of his career is going to be Deflategate and his subsequent punishment. If he wants to go full-blown honest about all that, sit in front of a camera and say, no, this is what we did. We didn't do that. We did this. And everybody else did that. I mean, then you've got people hooked.
Right.
As a current player, there's no chance he does it. You know, if he was retired, maybe he kind of opens up more about it.
What if he retires? Wins the Super Bowl in Tampa this year?
And he retires. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe.
That was how the original Tom versus Time. Remember the rumors were? That's how it was
going
to end?
It felt like it was going that way.
Yep. 617-779-7937. We'll talk with you guys coming up next. A high noon hot take from our buddy Andy Hart.
Not so hot.
Well, we'll see. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Hey, Dale.
Yes?
Where's your TB12 tattoo again?
Right on the butt cheek.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's probably the best one.
Right on the butt.
Now back to Dale and Keith.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 3793-7 1230. Kiefer Madness, our week in review, including wise words from Wiggy. Coming up at about 140 or thereabouts, Shy is going to find some obscure Korean table tennis match for you to place a bet on, because he and the governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu, apparently share a brain. So we'll get to that with you, and we'll find out which of the four movies we nominated in the Dale and Keefe Movie Club yesterday that you're going to make us watch this weekend. Although one of us doesn't have to watch it, really, because Rich is going to be off next Tuesday, and I...
Well, you know, I still may watch. Depending on what wins, I will watch.
And
I'm
never
give
invited,
you my notes.
So I'm not part of this little
game you
play.
No, you really wouldn't be.
You have to be here. It's awkward.
Basically. We tried to invite you, and you picked a music documentary.
No, not a music documentary. A live
concert. That's insane. Like, what are you going to talk about with that?
You didn't actually buy into that, did you?
That's what John said. But that was your pick.
Do you think I have any interaction with John when I'm not actually here at the station or
all
in the studio?
All the time.
I feel like he's
by
a guy.
By the way, just so you know, Andy,
yes.
You're on the show next Tuesday.
When that's true.
When we do this, when we review the movie review winner, so you have to watch it.
So then
I should have
had a horse in the race, a dog in the fight.
Yeah, you picked Kenny Chesney live at No Shoes Nation.
Yeah, you had
so you
an opportunity.
To, you don't get to be.
No, I didn't
a
have an opportunity.
You're not invited to the club.
It immediately got vetoed.
The hipster D-bag over there, I don't have any interaction with him.
Come on. I thought he produced your podcast.
Like 20 years ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Actually, he did nothing.
That's where the relationship formed.
He tried to produce one episode, and then he realized I wasn't going to listen to or read his rundown or really take any direction at all. Just
that's
flick,
true.
Press record, yeah. And I would go, and that's where it ended.
And then he also ran your Twitter account for a short time.
Right.
Until all the complaints
into
came
the
in.
Ground.
Now, yeah. Now, no, Hannibal has run it into the ground. He that has point. Taken over, and I'm not sure he uses it at all. Now, I didn't necessarily like where John was taking the Twitter handle, but I can
just
tell you
where
Ryan
took it.
Just
the same thing that's been done with the Dale Keefe account, and I know Rich particularly has been very impressed with that. I was doing the same thing with the Off Day account, and you guys didn't let me just run with it for a little bit and see where it goes.
Oh, it's, I did. I didn't
it's
care.
It's hit or miss gifs and memes, but, you know.
More miss than hit, right?
Nah, it's better than nothing, though.
Some graphics with hideous work done, graphic design.
Oh, that is where he really struggles. That is not his strength.
He's blind, you know.
Yeah, I'm very colorblind, people, okay?
Correct. So just stick with the basics. Stick with the gifs and the memes.
Are you really colorblind?
Yes, very, very.
Yeah, haven't you seen the graphics?
I have. I just thought it was like his thing. Like, I'll try to be as crazy and ugly as possible.
Every graphic he has is like color rush.
Yeah, he doesn't have an editor, so it just goes out.
So were you one of those people that complained when the Jets and the Bills played?
I was actually tweeting at the NFL all week about that. I swear to God, I was like, I'm not going to be able to tell the difference between these. And then you go and you play, and it's like Tyrod Taylor was standing in the end zone. It looked like his head was floating.
I hate you. I hate you.
It was horrible. Right. I could not tell the difference between the two teams.
And that's your problem. Deal with it.
That was a bad. They shouldn't have done that. That wasn't.
Go watch a music video, you hipster dink.
Remember that
Kenny
one,
Chesney?
Music remember video. The one graphic he put together, Rich, for us? And it like blinded you.
Yeah, when they
you
all saw do. It.
Yeah, but, no, he had to scrap that. That really
no. There was one in particular. It was like, oh my, it hurt my eyes.
No, he's outsourced those ever since then.
He's learned his lesson.
Again, it's not his strength, but again, we all
so we all have to live in his world. What portion of the population is colorblind?
I don't know. Probably. I don't know.
I think there's a thing where like women can't be colorblind.
All right, now you're just making stuff
what?
Up.
I know. He's full of it. Is that does that because they have the wrong sputum?
Approximately 1 in every 12 men are colorblind, and 1 in every 200 women are colorblind.
So much for the women can't be colorblind.
So a very small percentage of the population is colorblind, and we have to placate them so they ruin what was a cool football game between red and green or whatever it was.
Oh yeah,
but that's way too like those are way too close. And that's like
I couldn't tell where the ball was.
I think that's like the of the colorblind afflicted. That is the most common one.
Red and green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. The hell do you do at traffic lights?
Those are top like neon. Those are like far further apart on the spectrum.
And
though.
They're always on the same spot, the top, right. Top the middle, and the bottom.
So it would be a cool trick to flip them over and watch all the colors.
So do you go through stop signs? You're like, no, that's not how this works.
It's the same shape every time.
It still says stop.
So if you could go around and flip them all upside down, there would be hilarity ensuing.
Just because I'm colorblind doesn't mean I can't read.
Yeah.
That was fun, though, growing up in elementary school, and every time somebody found out, you'd have, like, the entire, like, the seagulls from Finding Nemo. You'd have every kid in the room in front of you pointing, like, holding up a shirt, pointing at something on the wall, asking
what
color it is.
You're like, oh
so did your mom have garanimals for you, you know, so that you didn't have some hideous outfit combination out there?
Oh, yeah, she dressed me. I think I have the same clothes from when I was, like, 15, too.
Explains a lot.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Explains a lot. That same hideous, size. That hideous, was it Montana jersey you had the other day? You didn't know it was as ugly
the
as
John
it is.
Elway jersey that was like really snug.
Yeah, this is all coming together. Why
I had
you
that
wear
when
such
I was like five.
Ugly? Mm-hmm. They should otherwise be cool, like Elway, Montana. I'm buying a cool shirt, and then you realize it's ugly as sin.
Yeah,
wow, somebody explains it
by
all.
By the way, I gave this note yesterday or the day before, Andy, because Schefter put it out. The top 10 jersey sales right now.
Yeah,
Tua Tagovailoa is 1 and 2.
Right,
one is the white, one is the aqua. And then Brady and Gronk, out of the next 8, they have 7 of the next 8.
Right.
The only guy who slips in there is Joe Burrow.
Right. And I can tell you the Hart household contributed because I believe last Friday or maybe earlier this week, my son's Rob Gronkowski jersey arrived. And
oh,
he's been wearing
computer?
It. No, he got the, is it red? Whatever the brightest color is. It's reddish.
Okay.
Yeah. I would wear
I've
it if
John.
Seen...
It'll be fun to hear him say what color it is.
I've never seen a breakdown
Bullies.
Like that. Usually, when they say jersey sales, they just tell you
the player.
They don't tell you the specific, right. Like home, away, whatever.
And
I've
Brady had all the alternate pewter, the white,
yeah.
The red, the this, the that. Like
yeah.
That was very strange. It was almost like it was calculated. Like they wanted you to know.
NFL Shop put this out. So.
No, I know, but
like,
why,
in years
Dale?
Past,
why,
like,
Dale? You got to ask why.
In years past, Dale, when they've said Tom Brady number one in jersey sales,
right.
They didn't get into like, oh, his white jersey was
right.
The number one sale.
So they could have just said Tua was 1, Brady is 2, Gronk is 3. Who are the others? Like if you lumped
right.
All of those into one thing. Why did they break it down for us? This is great investigative journalism on the radio. Why did the NFL try to mislead us with their jersey sales numbers?
How do you think the Jarrett Stidham jersey sales are going to do?
Not great. No. Yeah. The only good thing I would say there is, you know how you had Antoine Walker and now you got Kemba Walker? What you can do in reverse with Stidham.
Jalen Brown?
Yeah. In reverse, you buy Stidham's jersey, and if he sucks, you just make it an old school Adam Vinatieri jersey. Hall of Famer, greatest kicker ever. Sure. Super Bowl's built upon him. So you get a little bit of a fallback plan there. Or you could just say he's going to be, you know, the next great thing because he should have been a first round talent if you ask.
That's what I heard. You know, he was a really good high school player?
I did. I heard that. A dual threat, could run a little bit too.
Right. Problem was, he went to, you know, two bad schools, and they didn't know how to use him.
Right, no, yeah.
And that high school offense.
Yeah. Right. It's not his fault, though.
Can I give you guys, informationally, an update on the NHL's proposal? Because it really matters.
Okay.
Pierre LeBrun sent this out. And we told you already, the top four teams in each conference, they'll play a round robin with each other. They'll play three games. While the bottom eight teams in each conference have this best-of-five play-in series. It's like we were told initially these top four teams are just going to play this round robin to kind of, you know, keep themselves sharp and all that. Now we find out those games matter.
This time.
The round robin can affect overall seeding. Like the Bruins, they go out and lose all three games in the round robin. They may go from the number one seed in the entire NHL and home ice throughout. They may fall down to second, third, whatever.
That doesn't seem fair, Dale.
Well, let me stop you right there. Home ice? You can take home ice,
just using
turn
that
it
as
sideways,
an example, but
stick it right up. I mean, what is home ice?
It also will affect who they play in the next round. Like,
right.
Now all of a sudden, what we thought was three round robin games so that they can get sharp, get themselves ready to start the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then, well, wait a minute, those games now count in the standings?
No, that's dumb. That shouldn't
So it wipes out three quarters of a season
now, because
of hockey.
Yes.
But because there's no reseeding, in a weird way, you could make out with that, right? Say the Bruins go from the one to the three, but if there's an upset in the play-in series, you end up playing the worst team anyway as the three. There's no real home ice. It's not like you're going to have a game seven in your building. So that whole thing goes out the window, which is too bad, too, for the Bruins, because they were looking like a team that, you know, the East or the whole thing might have to go through the Bruins. Didn't work for them last year, but still, I think it, you know, helped them get there.
But these are games.
Now it doesn't matter.
You're acknowledging that they're essentially tune-up games, and yet they're valuable. Like, they count.
It's like preseason.
Like the
games
number
that
four
count.
Team. the number four team. They go sweep all three games in the round robin. They could go from the fourth seed overall to suddenly they're the second or the first seed. And the Bruins, who have the best record in the National Hockey League, they don't do as well in this tune-up round robin, and all of a sudden they're the third seed overall or something.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's a terrible idea. Really now, is this stupid. Where is this? Is this like
an
actual
this,
report?
Pardon me?
Is this like an actual report that this is how it's going to be handled, or is it a proposal?
No. This is what they're voting on right now.
Well,
this is
no.
the proposal they're voting on.
Send that back.
This is you know what? Don't even vote. Treat it like the idea for the moving your draft pick status up based on the color of your coach's skin. Let's just not even vote on this. Let's move on. Everybody's offended by it. Let's pretend it never happened.
Yeah, I think if anything, you do like a play-in with the teams that are 8 through 12, or the teams that need the games to get to like 70 or whatever. And then you, from there, you just take the eight teams in each conference and have your playoff run. You don't need to invite 24 teams. You don't need to do this whole thing where now all of a sudden, I mean, some of these teams that are really not deserving of even being there, with Montreal and I think Chicago would get in. Like, they were not going to make the playoffs.
They were not
going to jump up there.
I said it kind of mockingly earlier, but
no,
who knows? Like, with all this time off and...
Then it's even more of like a... Like
a sham.
A sham season, yeah.
Yeah, but it could be entertaining.
Maybe.
I'll watch it.
617-779-7937. We've got a high noon hot take from Hart coming up. We've got Kiefer Madness at the bottom of the hour. And our week in review, it's Dale and Keefe with Andy Hart. Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.